NBA scout right now. Let's pick the number one instead of the number seven from Madrid. Hashtag F4 Glory.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. And you can find me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Bball. Another season recap podcast here covering the Charlotte Hornets. We've got a bit to talk about with them. So Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Thank you very much. Of course, the Hornets do have a new coach for next season, hiring James Borrego after firing Steve Clifford. I just don't know what to make of Borrego. I spoke about that in one of the draft recap podcasts when the news came down. He's a guy that, had that opportunity in Orlando when Jacque Vaughn was fired, didn't do anything there to impress me, much like JB Bickerstaff in Memphis and Houston. He went to become an assistant with the San Antonio Spurs, seemed to be in the running for a number of jobs, and now he's in Charlotte. But I don't really know what this guy stands for. I don't know how he's going to impact this team. He feels like quite an unambitious hire from the Hornets. Clifford had his moments, really did do some stuff strongly defensively on the boards, but had issues getting the team to really gel together. I didn't like the way that he handled rookies at times. You know, I'm quite against that real hard ass mentality. I'm not a fan of that. I don't think that's the best way to develop the majority of players. And in the end, yeah, Clifford's teams, despite injuries being a factor, they did underperform. So Borrego gets the opportunity and maybe he can start to develop some of these players a little bit more than what Clifford did, although Clifford's work with Kemba Walker was impressive. Clearly, the Hornets have the number 11 pick in the draft for the second consecutive season. They chose Malik Monk with that last season, and they have another opportunity to go back to the well at pick 11. They also have pick 55, which a lot of the time, when nearly all the time, is a nonsense pick. So pick 11 is the one they're going to be focusing on. They, apart from Kemba, who's aging, obviously, they don't really have any positions that are absolutely locked in and they can't be drafting guys in that spot. You're just looking for the best player at that position, whether it's a big man, Dwight Howard's not going to be around forever, whether it is a wing, Malik Monk was solid but not necessarily spectacular. Kemba Walker could be gone at some point. You just take who the best player is. Maybe that's a Lonnie Walker in that spot. Maybe they take a flyer and a Zaire Smith. There are numerous different options for them. Maybe they find themselves in the position where one of the top seven guys slides, or top eight guys, much like Monk did last season. That could be an option. Do they see a guy like Bumba fall down? Probably not. I couldn't say that. Do they take a Bridges, Miles or Mikal? I don't know, but there is opportunities for them there. I'll just mention the 2018 draft. We're going to be doing some draft coverage in June. We'll have at least 2 to 3 draft preview shows. We'll have a mock draft show as well before the NBA draft happens. And then after that, after the draft, there will be a massive draft recap podcast. Maybe even have to split it in two, depending on how long it goes for. In terms of free agency on this team, not a lot to really look at. Michael Carter-Williams is an unrestricted free agent. I don't think they should be bringing him back. Malik Monk played himself into that backup point guard role and was strong there. Now, whether he becomes the starting shooting guard, depending on what they do with Kidd Gilchrist and a new coach and a new potential philosophy there, Monk is going to be in for a bigger role. But there was no need to bring Carter-Williams back, I don't think. He did play some good defense, and we'll talk about that in a second, but I don't think that he should be a priority. Trevion Graham, probably the biggest priority, a wing who hits threes at a high rate. Still not sold that he's necessarily as good a three-point shooter as we've seen. I think he was like a 56% guy in his first year, and that dropped back, but still really impressive. But wing players who can hit threes and provide some defense can be useful. I don't think his offers are going to be that high. They should be looking to bring him back. They've got Julian Stone, who was a non-guaranteed third-string point guard this season. Don't think they need to bring him back, but they could easily guarantee him to be that third stringer instead of Michael Carter-Williams. Well, they're two two-way guys. Matok Matiang and Marcus Page are both restricted guys as well. Not that either of those players really stood out. Matiang had, I think he had one interesting game. Page has been a guy that was drafted 2 years ago and really didn't do a huge amount this season. The Hornets finished the year 36-46. That was six under their expected win-loss record. So, meaning, look, they could have been a playoff team if they had have played up to the expectation. They lose close games. They do it all the time. They always seem to be in positions to win and can't get over the hump. And whether that's a coaching thing, whether that's a player personnel thing, the most likely reason is that it's both of those things combined. But that's been a consistent theme for this team. When you pair that to someone like the Grizzlies, not necessarily last season, but over the past 4 to 5 seasons, who are a team who would consistently win those games, there is something in the mentality or the coaching or the players that is leading to that problem where they can't get over the hump in those close games. They actually played at a higher pace than anticipated, the eighth highest pace in the NBA, the 13th best offense and the 16th best defense. And that's, again, like those numbers are pretty good. Average defense, above average offense, and the fact that they still finished 36-46, that's why that was six wins under their expected, because both of those things were pretty good. They did those things, but just some poor decisions at times led to those problems with the Hornets and them, again, missing the playoffs in a year where that opportunity was clearly there for them, not able to get there. They were number one in the league in free throw rate. A lot of that is Dwight Howard and his ability to draw free throws, not his ability to hit them, but they took the most free throws per game and converted the 24th highest percentage at only 74.7. And that's the big Dwight Howard factor, really up there in rebounding rate as well. The best defensive rebounding team in the NBA, again, largely fueled by Howard. Not as strong offensively on the glass, and they did take care of the ball really well as well. Second in turnover percentage. So they did quite a few things well, and that's why those numbers were as good as they were offensive and defensive rating wise, but it didn't translate into the record. And that's, part and parcel of why Steve Clifford got the arse after the year, because again, the numbers said that they should have been better, and they should have been, and they weren't able to capitalize fully on the things that were going well. Best and worst offensive, defensive, and defensive ratings. The highest offensive rating on the team was Bill Hernangómez, who came across in a trade. He showed flashes at the end of the year when Cody Zeller was hurt, after being completely lost in New York. The worst offensive rating on the team, the Baconator, Dwayne Bacon, not surprisingly, a second-round rookie who was forced into a larger role than what he probably should have. Not surprising that he wasn't able to get it done. The best defensive rating on the team was Matok Matiang. That's obviously in a limited role, but otherwise it was Dwight Howard. No surprise there. Well, the worst defensive rating on the team was Marcus Page, and a little bit surprisingly, Trevion Graham, who I think he can be a solid defender. In terms of the advanced stats leaders, Bill Hernangómez, 25 PER is obviously a monster. He is a guy that PER does favor, a high rebounding, high efficiency big man, which is what he is. True shooting, Julian Stone at 68%. That's a complete anomaly. Don't buy too much into that. Kemba led the team in usage, in win shares, in offensive box score plus minus, in box score plus minus, and in VORP, and no one would be surprised about any of that. Bill Hernangómez with an absolutely massive win shares per 48 at 0.266. That is a huge, huge number. While Michael Carter-Williams led the team in defensive box score plus minus. Again, as I said, his defensive contributions were pretty impressive this season, but overall his offense is an absolute disaster. And, that's probably why he's not going to be able to really stick in the NBA too much longer than what he currently is. Whether he gets another contract remains to be seen. Let's start with Kemba, a player who, of course, was impressive. He's just turned 28, 80 games, 34 minutes, 22, 3, and 5 and a half, 3 triples, 1.2 steals, 43, 86, and 38 as his percentages for a true shooting of 57 on a usage of 27%. Obviously, really impressive. And I think the numbers and the rankings would have been better for Kemba. He was the 30th ranked player this season. They would have been better if that he didn't completely shit the bed by the end of the season. He took the record for most points scored in Hornets history, and after that, he completely disappeared and had this very un-Kemba-like stretch of 7, 10, 9, 13, 12, and 15 points to end the year. His minutes reduced to under 25 in the three last games, and the shooting was way off, did not hit over 50% from the field and until the last game of the year in those last six, and was 4 in a row of under 40% on limited shots as his usage really dropped, and he seemed to be really, really pissed about something that was going on there, because he's a guy that was consistently usage of 30% and then went down to 18% and didn't hit any shots and just looked completely checked out. So that's an interesting subplot to me. Now, I say it all the time, you can gain some things by looking at the end of the season. You can't gain everything. It's not like, well, they did this over the last five games and now they're going to do it over 80 games. But you can get impressions. All right, he can do that. If he's given that opportunity, that can happen. And the other thing we look at here is what happened? Why was he pissed? Because it wasn't just all about reduced minutes, because usage doesn't take into account minutes. So when your usage is going at 18%, like Kemba's was over that last stretch of the season, you have to look at it and go, well, what's actually going on here? Why did that happen? Did he get advance notice that Clifford was being fired? Did they say, Kemba, we're trying to reduce you because we want other guys to come in because we're going to trade you in the offseason? That's all a possibility. Don't discount any of that. That is a chance that Kemba is moved this offseason. A new GM in place with Mitch Kupchak, a new coach in place. Maybe Jordan said, all right, we are going with a young coach. Let's try and build this thing up now properly. Doesn't seem like the Michael Jordan way. But you just feel that there's some sort of switch that happened and Kemba just was like, screw this shit. Like, what's going on? And that's the sort of impression that I got from him watching those last couple of games. That's all speculation. But let's just wait and see what happens with Kemba Walker over the course of this offseason. Nick Batum, clearly one of my favorites in the NBA, 29 years of age, 64 games, had that elbow issue to start the year, and we thought, shit, this is going to be a real problem, but came back, played well. It was clearly bothering him, but he ended the season as the 84th ranked player, 31 minutes, 11.6 points, 1.5 threes, 5 boards, 5.5 assists, a steal and half a block, 42, 83, and 34% for a true shooting of 52. And you don't draft Nick Batum for scoring. Yeah, 11.6 points is not getting it done. It's the threes, it's the rebounds, it's the assists, it's the steals, it's the high free throw percentage. He is a perfect rotisserie player because of his ability to contribute in multiple categories. And we saw that again from Batum this year. That he just does do these things in multiple different areas. He played shooting guard a lot this season. I can really see him moving up to the three, which is probably his best position to allow Monk or Jeremy Lamb to move into that starting lineup, given how Michael Kidd-Gilchrist does struggle, and Borrego may have a different opinion there. Batum's numbers did dip from last season, a scoring dip of over 3 points per game, and played an extra 3 minutes fewer this season. But overall, his efficiency was basically exactly the same as it was last season. So a lot of it was minutes, and a lot of that is to do with that elbow injury that did bother him. He was coming off two straight top 50 seasons, wasn't able to do that again this year. But still, those other numbers are in place. The assists, the rebounds, the steal numbers, very similar to what he'd done over the past couple of seasons. His rebounding rate did dip because he played more at the two than at the three. And that's important to note too, that if he goes back to the three, the rebounds might go back from 5.6 per 36 up to 6.6 or up to 7, which are numbers that he'd done over the previous four seasons. And that would add an extra 10, 15 spots onto his ranking potentially. Give him 33 minutes a game instead of 31 minutes a game, and he bumps up again. So it's far from a write-off for Batum in terms of everything here, because there are clear reasons. The elbow injury, the playing down a position, the three fewer minutes per game, all that contributed to the drops in points and the drop in rebounds and the drop by 30 spots in ranking, and that could easily be recovered. But Borrego may have a completely different idea, and they want to play Batum in a 27-minute bench role to anchor the second unit and be the backup point guard, so to speak. So there are issues there. He's still not 30 years of age. Batum, he's got a bit over 6 months to go. So by the start of the season, he'll be just about to turn 30. So we expect some decline. But again, his game is not built on athleticism necessarily. It's not built on high percentage shooting. We'll get into the rim. It's doing those other things. It's rebounding. It's assist. It's providing solid-ish defense, which I think he still did at a decent level. Posted positive defensive box score, plus minus, a PER of almost average. The shooting was the concern. The elbow was the concern for Nick during the year, and those things, you know, they could recover themselves as next season kicks off for Nicola Batum. Dwighty Howard, I thought he was really good this season. He was pretty poor during his time in Atlanta, and I didn't know that he was necessarily, I didn't think he was going to be an upgrade over Cody Zeller, given what they can do for the team. Now, Steve Clifford did get through to him this season, and I thought we saw much better performances from Howard this year. It's still, I don't know. I don't know where we sit with Dwight as a player. He still only played 30 minutes per game. He played 30 last season, but what he did do was see his usage spike from 19 up to 24%. So saw the ball a lot more, way more touches. And that's part of why he bitched his way out of Atlanta, because he wasn't getting the post up touches. And these delusional people who think they should be doing more than they do really do get under my skin. And Howard is clearly one of those guys, but 16.5 points, 12.5 rebounds, 1.6 blocks with 55% from the field. That's solid numbers. Now, the field goal percentage dipped because he was taking more shots and probably not as good shots as what he should be. That dipped from over 60% in his last two seasons in Atlanta to only 55%. And that's one of the big reasons why Dwight Howard can be a strong fantasy player, is his ability to hit at a high percentage. And you can look at this stuff on Basketball Reference in terms of average distance of shot. In Atlanta, the last season, we're talking about 2.9 feet average distance. In Houston the year before, 2.6 average distance. This year, 4.7. That's not ideal for a guy that can't shoot and doesn't have a good post game, but still thinks that he can. And there was a little bit of pandering from Clifford to Howard to get him to engage to do that sort of stuff that won't necessarily happen as we move forward. Defensively, he was still strong. Offensively, he cost the team a lot with some of those poor decisions and the poor free throws. And of course, if you're owning him in fantasy, he has to be a punt free throw guy. There's no way around that. 57% on 7 attempts is an absolute monster. It's a negative 4.4 Z score. You can't recover from that. You can't pair him with James Harden. You can't pair him with Kevin Durant. You are losing that category, and you have to be aware of that. He is a punt guy. You can't say I'm drafting him and not punting, because you're deluding yourself. You are punting. Howard is 30 years of age, will turn 31 at the beginning of next season, and I get the feeling that maybe a couple of minutes could be coming off here. It all depends on how Borrego does want this offense to run and how they do things. Will they want more Bill Hernangómez? Will Cody Zeller get in there more? Will they piss Howard off by saying, don't take 11 shots per game, go back to the 8 you were doing in Houston, Atlanta, stay close to the rim, we're not involving you? Then his defense falls off, and then he just doesn't do what needs to do. Do they trade him? I don't know. There's a lot of concern here with Howard. I still think that he can be a top 50 guy in punt free throw builds just because of that rebounding ability, the blocks, and hopefully an increase in field goal percentage. But obviously, if you're not punting free throw percentage, or if you don't want to do that, then you're not having anything to do with Dwight Howard. That's why a ranking of 90 means nothing for him. He's either undraftable or he's close to a top 50 guy, because that is such a big, big deficit in his overall value in that free throw percentage category. Let's talk Jezza Lamb, who was really impressive this year. Just turned 26. He's 80 games, 25 minutes, 13 points, 1-3, 4 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 0.8 steals, 46, 86, 37 for a true shooting of 56%, right on league average. Saw his minutes jump from 18 up to 25. Scored really well. The efficiency was up, and that's 3 years in a row with shooting of over 45% from the field, but was able to get his three-point shooting, which had been abysmally bad, 31 and 28 the last two seasons. He got it up to 37%, which was enabling him to stay on the court a lot longer. We know that he and Steve Clifford had had their disagreements in the past, especially defensively. I thought he improved his defense quite a bit this season, Lamb, and was actually a positive in terms of on offer, a positive two over the course of his 2,000 minutes this season. He is one of those guys, along with Monk, who could be challenging Michael Kidd-Gilchrist for his starting position next season. And if Lamb is able to take it up from the 25 minutes per game he played up to 30 minutes, then he's a clear must-own guy. This year, he was the 121st ranked player in those limited minutes, and really just solid enough contributions across all categories. The ideal sort of roto guy, not really a massive head-to-head contributor, but in the games where he was playing bigger minutes, he was obviously putting up some impressive type performances, and we saw it from him. He was one of those guys in the past that would come out and have these strong games of like 8 rebounds and 20 points on 80% shooting, and so much of that was unsustainable. But this year, as he heads into any 6th NBA season, he was able to sustain that value. And in the 12 games that he played over 30 minutes this year, he averaged 16 and 6. He was a plus 7.9 during that time and didn't shoot all that efficiently, but was still able to get you close to a steal and a block per game and get you around 3.5 to 4 assists. Really impressive in that time, and could be a guy that if we do hear rumblings that they're opening up that starting spot, whether it's for Lamb or Monk, then he would be a top 20 candidate at the age of 26. It's not like he's past his prime. He's got a lot to give still. And I think there is an opportunity for Jeremy Lamb to even improve further next season, as opposed to what we saw this year, where he was, you know, really quite a good player for this team and one of the better contributors on this Hornets squad. Let's talk about a guy who was really disappointing, and that's Marvin Williams, just about to turn 32. He was the 146th ranked player this season. In 26 minutes per game, he averaged 9 points with under 5 rebounds, 1.6 triples, 0.7 steals, 0.5 blocks, 46, 83, and 41% from 3. The 3-point shooting from Williams has been up and down. In 15-16, he was at 40. He was at 35 last year and back to 41 this season. But one of the reasons why his numbers or his ranking had been inflated over the past couple of seasons was the block rate, which had gone from 0.7 per 36 over the last 2 years to 1.2 and 0.9. But unfortunately, those numbers did dip again, and that caused him to fall well out of that range. Now, he's a guy that's a darling in 9-cat leagues because he doesn't turn it over, but you know how much credence I give to turnovers. Absolutely zero. And you can tell me all that you want. Oh, he was a top 980 guy, top 100 guy in 9-cat. That's great. But he's giving you 9 points and 4 rebounds and not really positively contributing in any other category apart from turnovers. So if you think that's valuable, then that's, I don't think that's the way to build a winning fantasy squad. He did improve a little bit over the course of the season, getting that block rate up again. And these last 4 games, he scored in double digits in all of those, multiple threes in all of those games. In fact, he hit 15 threes over the past last four games and had 5 blocks. And that was a little bit of an insight into past Marvin Williams, but he's 32 years of age. Do they move? I talked about Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Do they play Kidd-Gilchrist at the 4, a position he is much better suited to? To get Lamb, to get Monk in next to Batum, I think that's a significant possibility. Williams is fine. He is okay, but they're hardly great numbers or great descriptive words you want from players who are starters on your team. True shooting was good. He was efficient, 60%. Box score plus minus stuff was solid. It was efficient. Win shares, really solid. Not nice-ish type numbers from Marvin Williams. A plus 3.3 on off. He does things still, but in terms of us for fantasy, he's not really that guy who is that top 100 player anymore, I don't think. But he is still going to have a role, but a drop is going to come at some point from Marv, whether last season was the beginning of that, or it is going to head into now his age 32 season. Will there be a further drop there for Marvin Williams? It remains to be seen. I wouldn't be putting much faith in him becoming a top 100 guy again, because I do think, again, there is that risk of Kidd-Gilchrist cutting into that playing time, or Frank Kaminsky, who I'm a little bit not excited about what Frank is able to do. Let's talk Frank now. He's 25 years of age. He played 23 minutes per game in his 79 games. 11, 3.6 and 1.6. He hit over a 3. Defensive numbers are woeful. 0.5 steals and 0.3 blocks. 43, 80 and 38% for a true shooting of 55%. Basically, at this point, I think he needs to be a center, and he's just not going to be a center with Hernan Gomez, Howard and Zella all on the roster, and that's going to limit what Frank can do. He was the 225th ranked player this season. The poor field goal percentage, a large contributor. Over the second half of the season, when Zella was struggling as well with injury, he did bump up the field goal percentage to 47% for a true shooting of 61. Now, if he can maintain that high level efficiency, get you 12 points with those threes, there's streamability there, but no rebounds, no assists, no steals, no blocks. That really limits what Kaminsky can do as a fantasy contributor. We saw career low in block rate from him this season as he played more at the 4. A guy who is just turned 25, so not necessarily a young guy, even though he's only played 3 years. He does still have some growth, but not as much as other players at that age. And I'm losing any hope that Kaminsky's ever going to be a top 100 player. Just too many deficiencies in numerous areas for him to be able to do that. And the defensive problems as a big man are really restrictive. A negative 1.2 box score plus minus for defensive box score plus minus is not good. And a negative 4.5 on-off is also not good. And I do fear, I don't think that he's really going to be stepping forward into a larger role next season because that defensive liability and the fact that he can't play the position where he might be able to at least do something with offensive mismatches is not available to him. I think that's a real worry for Frank's minutes moving forward. Cody Zeller, 33 games, 19 minutes, 7-5 with 0.6 blocks, 55-72. Like, his efficiency was there as it usually is, a true shooting of 61%, but just can't stay healthy. Knee problems really bothered him. We saw that last year. He was still able to put up numbers which were okay this year, pretty much the same as what he did last season. 13.5 and 10 rebounds per 36 with 1.2 blocks and almost a steal, and did it with good efficiency, improving his free throw percentage too. But he's a guy that needs 34, 33 minutes to really be an impactful fantasy guy, and I don't think he's that. And I said this numerous times in the offseason. I think that Zeller can be a solid player, and I thought he was, you know, had an opportunity to be better for what this team needed than what Howard is, but he's just not a good fantasy guy, and he's nowhere near as good as what Dwight is. He just doesn't rack up the numbers in a similar way to Dragan Bender in Phoenix. His on-court stuff is solid. His advanced stats can be good at times, but overall, it doesn't translate into fantasy production, and that's something that we've got to look at. You know, win shares per 48 is third on the team, behind Bill Hernangómez, behind Kemba Walker. You know, that's strong. Defensive box score plus minus, he was good there. He had a positive on-off of 1.8, you know, solid in that area as well, but still, not a guy that I look at as really ever becoming an elite type fantasy contributor. Let's go on to Mick Kidd-Gilchrist. I just don't know with this guy anymore. He's still only 24, amazingly, into his second contract. 74 games, 25 minutes, 9-4, 0.7 steals and 0.4 blocks, 50, 68, and of course doesn't hit any threes whatsoever. One of those guys that at least takes the shots that he knows he can hit, and that high field goal percentage is useful for us in fantasy. But what we saw, not unsurprisingly, as he played more at the three and with Dwight Howard around, his rebound rate dropped considerably, 8.6 per 36 down to 5.9. His block rate playing down at the three went from 1.1 to 0.6 as well. These are pretty significant differences for Kidd-Gilchrist as opposed to what he'd done in the past. In fact, 95% of his minutes this season were played at the three, as opposed to, bring up last year's numbers, where he played, where are we, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist? Yeah, 12% of minutes at the four as opposed to five this year. So that's a significant difference. He still was able to be a positive on-off contributor because his defense is strong, but offensively he is a massive, massive negative, and that's what Borrego is going to have to decide. So there's still quite a bit in flux for this Hornets team in terms of how these lineups are going to look. With Howard around, him playing at the three, that rebound, which really was his major fantasy strength, is probably not going to go back up. His block rate and steal rate, their numbers where he was able to improve that in 16-17, but they dipped last season playing in that different role. If we see him as a starting power forward, then you can assume we get increased rebounds, we get increased blocks, but his upside is just so low. And another one of those guys whose 9-cat ranking is extraordinarily influenced by turnovers, which are by far his best category. If we want to look at that on Z score for this season, 1.35 for turnovers. His next best category, 0.44. So we're talking about three times as impactful in turnovers as what he was in any other category. And to me, that's not the making of a good fantasy player, where your negative category is by far your best one by a 300% factor. That's a real issue, and it does skew things quite significantly. Now, last year, he was the 111th ranked guy, even in 8-cat rankings, because he played more minutes, he got more rebounds, he blocked shots, he got steals at a higher rate as well, and his free throws were at 78% as opposed to 68% this season. But I don't have faith in Kidd-Gilchrist ever becoming a top 100 player or ever becoming a guy who's going to force himself into a larger role. A lot of it could come down to what happens with Marvin Williams in that front court and what they do along the wings there. But I don't think that we should be prioritizing Kid Gilchrist to all of a sudden become this elite fantasy contributor. My faith in him is fairly limited at this point. Speaking of limited faith, Michael Carter Williams, 26 years of age, 52 games, 16 minutes, and missed the end of the season with a shoulder injury. 4.6, 2.7, and 2.2. He did have a steal a game. He did have 0.4 blocks, which in 16 minutes are pretty good rates, but 33% from the field, 24% from three for a true shooting of under 45% is just not good enough. And as I mentioned, he is an unrestricted free agent. Malik Monk should clearly have that backup point guard role ahead of him, depending on what Borrego wants to value. I don't think he should be valuing Carter Williams at all, but his offense is such a negative and you need that. Look, he's a good defender as a point guard, no doubt, but that's not as important as being able to do something offensively. A box score plus minus of negative 0.6 looks all right, but negative 2.6 offensively and positive 2 defensively, it shows really where the value is coming from Carter Williams. He was a negative 3.9 during the season, one of only 6 players on this roster that was in the negative in terms of their on-off. Really struggled with doing anything offensively. And, that is going to limit what he can do moving forward. The 298th ranked player this season, if he's not in the NBA or not a regular part of a rotation next season, I don't think I would be surprised either. Malik Monk, I spoke about him, at length in the rookie recap stuff, and what we saw from him at the end of the season was very encouraging. The shooting was poor, but I thought he was mishandled by Steve Clifford all season. Wouldn't send him to the G League, wouldn't play him. Yeah, he played 63 games, but just junk time minutes, not in a large role. But when we saw him down the stretch of the season, he was impressive. He took on a larger role. He played point guard, something we didn't see from him at Kentucky, and over the last 10 games, he was able to be a top 100 player in only 20 minutes per game because he shot 41% from three, analogous to what he did in college, 46 from the field, and averaged 15 points with 3 triples and 2.6 assists. Yes, the 30% usage is an unrealistically high number for Monk, but he was at 26 over the course of the season. He can maintain a decent enough level where he could be, you know, realistically a 20-point scorer, and adding the assists, which is not something I knew he could do necessarily, and why his translations didn't look great coming out of college. But if he's getting assists and getting 4 per game and getting 1.2 steals, which again, it's not there yet, but it's a possibility. Give you 3.2 triples per game and do it in mid-40s percentages. That's a top 100 guy. And he does have, and I was way out on him. I thought he was shit all season. And he was poorly handled. And all of those things are true. But he did step it up at the end of the year. His advanced numbers are disgustingly ugly. Win shares of 0, negative 4.4 box score plus minus. A team worst, negative 15.4 on-off is obviously very, very unimpressive. But I think there's a huge future. 20 years of age only. I think that we're looking at a 20, 22 minute per game role with the potential to be a 30 minute player next season, as early as next season, jumping into a larger role. And if he averaged 16-4 with 2.5 threes per game on 43% shooting, I don't think that that's an outrageous expectation for him. Not saying he'll get there. I'm not saying that's what he'll be projected at, but I do think that he has that ability and we saw it. It's all going to be dependent on how that role is apportioned out by Cliffo. Bill Hernan Gomez, a real lost season for him this year, barely played in New York where people thought he was going to be the starting center heading into camp. And then of course the Enes Kanter trade happened. He moved behind Kanter and Cock on the depth chart. Didn't do massive amounts in Charlotte. Played 22 games, 12 minutes per game, 6 points, 5 rebounds, half a steal, half a block in those 12 minutes. He shot 57% from 3, something that he did start to do, which again, not something that we should be expecting that level of shooting out of Bill, but 51% from the field. And his free throws at a really impressive 76 after being only 43% in New York. And something I'm starting to get, you know, head around is that free throw percentage, so much of it is mentality, that these guys, that when they have dips in their free throws, it's to do with unhappiness. Brook Lopez, we saw that. Hernan Gomez here, players last season, Victor Oladipo in OKC. And if they go to a situation where they feel happier, then they're going to be able to shoot, I think, better. Now, I need to do more research into that, but it's something that it is starting to, you know, crystallize in my head. Per 36, his numbers are still fantastic. 18 and 13 with over a steal, over a block, and 55%. And that's 66% from the line. I think that's not something we should be expecting to continue, and he should be a mid-70s guy in that category. Over the last 22 games of the season, he was the 44th ranked player in per 36 numbers, averaging 19 and 16 with those really strong percentages. Will he start next season? Probably not. Dwight Howard's still there. Cody Zeller's around. But there is some potential for Hernan Gomez. Now, I don't think that he's as good a player as what some other people think. They think he's his future star in the making. I don't necessarily think that. The advanced numbers do really favor him, but he only played 262 minutes all season. He had, you know, limited time in Charlotte and in New York. He didn't play all that much, but down the stretch, we did start to see more out of Bill Hernan Gomez as he pushed himself into a larger role. 15 and 11, 11 and 8, 11 and 12, 14 and 8, 16, 6 and 10 over the last six games of the year. There's some decent enough numbers, some good efficiency numbers from him in there as well, and he can block some shots without being a really great rim protector. Again, he is Enes Kanter, but a worse version of Enes Kanter. Just keep that in mind. He's not this elite shot blocking defensive type center. Although his defensive performance this season was more impressive than what it had been in his rookie year. Still some value in him. I don't think he's ever a 30-minute per game starting center, but he's one of those guys that in 24 minutes, he is a top 100 candidate. Can he get to 24 next season? If Zeller and Howard remain there, that probably seems unlikely, but we're talking 3 years in the future. If he has a couple of 24-minute per game years, I wouldn't be surprised, and that would give him potentially a couple of top 100 fantasy seasons. And I think that's the way you should be looking at Bill Hernan Gomez. Dwayne Bacon, yeah, not a lot to really say with Baco. The other guy there is Trevion Graham, who again shot 41% from three, but does very little else. Only 43% overall from the field, 0.9 assists, 0.5 steals, just doesn't do enough in many areas. And he was the 387th ranked fantasy guy. Started games this season, didn't do a huge amount in that time. And not someone that I really think at the age of 24 is going to take a step forward and become a fantasy contributor in anything outside of 30-team leagues. That does it for the Charlotte Hornets season recap. My name's Josh Lloyd. If you did forget, follow me on Twitter at @redrock_beeble and leave a review and a rating for this podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Of course, YouTube also, thumbs up, comment, you can do all that over there. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and LockedOnSports.com. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Nick Batum.